Tonight on ESPN, looking back at some of the greatest Monday Night Football moments, it's a classic Colts-Patriots showdown from the 05 season. It's Peyton Manning, it's Tom Brady, Colts-Pats, first time in seven meetings that Peyton going for the win. Tonight, 8:30 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Meanwhile, right now, a motorsports update brought to you by Mother's Polish. And it is the Formula One Virtual Grand Prix, where Charles Leclerc won his second straight race in the series, taking the Virtual Chinese Grand Prix. The 22-year-old has won two actual F1 races and said he only started playing the video game about a week before his victory. The actual race was originally scheduled for April 19th, but of course has been postponed. Meanwhile, today on ESPN, after we wrap up, it'll be time for First Take, followed by SportsCenter, then NFL Live, then Rachel Nichols and The Jump, followed by our NFL Draft Buzz special. SportsCenter back at 5 this evening. The PTI guys will be there at 5:30. And cap the day with SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. All of that and more on ESPN and the ESPN app. We are here with you as sports fans as we all try to get through this together, and we all, in unison, express our appreciation and admiration for the heroes among us, the medical professionals and the first responders and so many others who are putting themselves in jeopardy to keep us safe and keep us healthy. We thank you. Our job is to entertain you for an hour starting right now. It is time to get up with Michael Jeffrey Jordan. The first look at Last Dance last night. And we've got all the reaction. Stephen A., Jalen, Jay Will, all in this hour. Then Tua tests badly. Or does he? Why, what people are saying about Tua's Wonderlic may matter more than the score itself. And Pete Alonso, going to make you an offer you may not want to refuse, and it's for a wonderful cause. He's live in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now with the moment we've all been waiting for. Last night, episodes 1 and 2 of the highly anticipated documentary, The Last Dance, premiering on ESPN. It's a 10-part series chronicling Michael and the Bulls, focused around the last of their 6 championships, which is the 97-98 season. But if you watched last night, then you know it takes into account so much more than that. It is seen through the prism of that last championship, but it takes into account everything. And last night you saw Michael's journey from a kid growing up in Wilmington, North Carolina, through his legendary 3 years at UNC and then on to the NBA. The second episode focusing primarily on Scottie Pippen and his relationship with Jerry Krause. Here is Jay Williams, who's with us. And Jay, you have an interesting perspective on this because you were drafted by the Bulls just a few years after Michael Jordan had his hand in the air winning that last championship, and you actually had Michael Jordan's locker. How would you describe, as one who was there in the immediate aftermath, the degree to which he hung over that franchise, that is his giant shadow that was cast over the franchise?
I mean, Greeny, I remember the game when he came back with the Wizards, and look, my record in college was 95-13 in 3 years, and I wanted to win more than anything, especially on that given night. And, you know, Chicago has one of the best fan bases there is in the world. I love Chicago fans. And I just remember to myself, you know, being there in the lineup and hearing his name being called from the Washington Wizards side. And he got a 15-minute standing ovation. 15-minute standing ovation. And I'm sitting there as, you know, somebody who's competitive saying, I just can't wait to get out there and just rip this guy. I can't believe he left the franchise. Just finding some way to be frustrated about this guy to just compete in that moment, because I wanted to go at him. I wanted to try to dominate him that game. And still, just his moves were, even at 40 years old, averaging 20 points, he just took me to positions. He was actually calling out where I should be on the floor defensively through the triangle system, because I didn't know the system that well at that time. So a guy who was still so sharp, but you almost felt that it was unrealistic that you could actually achieve the level of success that Jordan and his teams were able to accomplish being a young Bull. It was crazy.
You played against him when he was 40. Let's bring into the conversation someone who played against him when he was the greatest player that ever lived. The one and only Jalen Rose is here. And Jalen, you had legendary battles with him. Obviously, you played against him in a conference final that will come into play in huge part later in the documentary series when Jordan won that last championship. How would you describe what it was like being on the floor trying to play defense when Michael Jordan had the ball?
First off, good morning, Greeny. I'm going to be a professional and answer your question first and foremost. But then I got to get to Jay Williams in
Let's
a second.
It.
Okay. playing against Michael Jordan, we're going to hear so much about the triangle offense, and rightfully so, it put everybody in position. You need that when you have an all-time great player. It creates a level of discipline and balance on the floor. So shout to Tex Winter and Phil Jackson for instituting that. But what normally happened was they'd swing the ball once or twice, and then all of a sudden it became something within the league we called the Bermuda Triangle, where really it was just MJ going one-on-one, and they just isolate for him. And such a dominant player, such a dominant scorer, the Black Cat, was faster, was stronger, was more athletic, had the killer instinct like no other. So now let me get to you, Jay Williams. I saw you and Marcus Spears, my brothers, on this television show, talking about Michael Jordan's leadership style and comparing it to LeBron James. Let me tell y'all something. When y'all want to have GOAT conversations, Greeny, I can't believe you allowed this to happen. Okay. First and foremost, we can't have an MJ versus LeBron conversation because LeBron got to leapfrog some other people on the Mount Rushmore, everyone. Okay, there are some people that play basketball that accomplished some things and achieved a level of greatness that LeBron just has not been able to do. You want me to name them for you?
Please.
Besides Michael Jordan?
Yes.
You ever heard of a guy named Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You ever heard of a guy named
Bill Russell?
You ever heard of a guy named Irvin Magic Johnson? When did LeBron pass Magic? Did I miss something? Did I miss something? He's in the top five.
Wait,
those guys.
Go ahead, J. Rose. Marcus is here too. Go ahead,
J. Rose. Look, we're talking about leadership style, J. Rose, and different strokes for different folks, man. You're from the old school. I get it. I like the old school mentality. But my thing is, just because you win championships and other guys win championships don't mean that other people think you're a great leader just because you won championships. And I understand that Jordan won six. And I understand that he's the greatest ever to do it, that you guys are saying that. But there are different ways to lead, guys. And some people are more preferential towards a stylership, leadership perspective of a LeBron James than a guy like Jordan that's like, just get out my way. Just get out of my way. It's just different strokes for different folks, Jay Rose.
Marcus, go ahead. What do you want to jump in with?
Look, we all know, we all hear the stories, and we all understand that Jordan was a venomous competitor. He got on his teammates. He lifted them. His ability to play the game was beyond what anybody had ever seen in the NBA. Everybody gets all of that. The thing that frustrates me, it's not even about who you think the greatest player of all time is that frustrates me. The frustration for me comes from you have to be the Jordan way in order to be the ultimate leader and competitor in the NBA. That's the part that bothers me in this whole conversation. Because if you are going to tell me that in LeBron's years in the NBA, he hasn't led and been able to make players play at a higher level than they probably assume they go. J.R. Smith's career was on the brinks of being just a fly-by-night guy. He's a champion. Matthew Dellavedova went and got $38 million from another basketball team because he played with LeBron James. Look at Tristan Thompson, the way he ascended and played. Like, there is a number of guys. There's a number of remnants from LeBron's leadership ways and the way he made guys better.
Where's Mills Wayne? Can I get in here?
Can I get in here, please?
Go, Jalen. Yes.
Okay. When did you guys get so emotional? Y'all talking about leadership style and teammates, how they felt about the process? Is that what I'm hearing? You guys know this as well as anyone. Okay, a lot of times championships don't necessarily buy happiness. Scottie Pippen basically was a top 10 in the league and getting paid in 1993. In 98, he was 120-something. He basically almost sabotaged the final year. He was not happy with them. He was not happy with his championships. I saw Shaquille O'Neal basically do the same thing when he didn't get a deal from the Lakers. He wanted the late, great Dr. Jerry Buss to give him a deal. They had just won three championships. He was unhappy in L.A. and went to Miami. KD went to Golden State and left there. He doesn't talk very fondly necessarily about that being the best experience of his career overall. It's about getting it done.
Yeah.
And nobody got it done better than Michael Jordan. And I heard you, Spears, talking about LeBron was the leader at all times. And of course, I don't want to down somebody to up somebody else type of thing, but we're just having a debate here. LeBron James went to Miami to learn a championship mojo. Okay, they had a leadership in place with Dwayne Wade that won a championship and Pat Riley as well. I'm just saying, we're going to talk all history, all facts.
LeBron James, who was his coach in Cleveland? Who was his coach in Cleveland?
It really didn't matter. That's why he left. Did he leave Cleveland, Jay?
Why did LeBron leave Cleveland?
That's why he went to go be part of an organization with Pat Riley. Guys won championships.
Can I relate this?
I've lost control. Marcus, can I ask you a question?
Can I relate this to my basketball aficionados? You know how much I respect you, Jalen, and Jay Will. I go to you guys for basketball knowledge, even though I've watched the game and participated. Let me ask y'all this, bro. Why is there this need? And Jalen, I feel like you're doing it. I love you, big bro. Why is this need to discredit LeBron James? Like, where does this come from? Is this something
I just need to know. He's on my Mount Rushmore. I have him as the fourth greatest player of all time. That's not diminishing someone.
Hold on, G. You have no choice but to put him on the Mount Rushmore. That's basketball. When we look at LeBron James play, we know LeBron James is one of the best basketball players we've ever seen. I'm talking about this conversation that I've had with some of my friends in the barbershop, talking to Jay Will, Jay Rose, former NBA players. Why is there this need, I feel, to discredit what LeBron does so much?
Marcus Spears, that question up there, and I graduated from high school. I was an honor student. And I was on the Dean's List at Michigan. I got a college degree. That question says, who is the greatest basketball player ever? It don't say who's the best leader. It don't say who's the most liked. And so when you're talking about greatest, you're talking about at his apex plus what he was able to achieve. There are some people walking the face of the earth that have played in the NBA that have been able to achieve more than LeBron James. It's only like three of them.
Okay,
I had discredit in him.
I have to go to a break. Jalen, you're coming back with Stephen A little bit later. I never got to make what I promised you was a brilliant point, and I hope that I will as we continue. In the meantime, we're going to get to some football coming up as well. Tua Tagovailoa. The Wonderlic score was released this weekend. Does it matter? And does it matter just the simple fact that it was released? We'll talk about that next. Get up on ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Back on Get Up, a very busy day in football looking towards the draft. Shefty is with us. Shefty, what is the league doing with this mock draft today?
It's going through an exercise, Greeny. Obviously, with this being the first virtual draft, they want to make sure there's no glitches. So it's not like teams are going to be making picks or turning in players. They just want to go through, test it. It's almost like a rehearsal for a play in advance, kind of a dry run, and to make sure it goes okay.
That we will have a draft dress rehearsal for the National Football League. Meanwhile, Leonard Fournette may be getting traded out of Jacksonville. What's the deal?
The Jaguars have been shopping him for quite some time right now. They're open to dealing him, and with this being draft week, this would be the time that you would think that they would move on from him. They've spoken to some other teams. He's due $4.16 million this year. I think the question other teams will be asking, are we better off getting a running back in the draft on a rookie contract or Leonard Fournette at $4-plus million?
And then the 49ers were in the Super Bowl last year, and they have two first-round picks this year. What do they want to do?
Well, and this is interesting, Greeny, because it's picks 13 and picks 31, and they would trade both picks. Keep in mind, the 49ers don't have second, third, and fourth round picks. They have two ones, and then they're not scheduled to pick again until the fifth round. They want to trade those picks and get back more picks. So if you want 13, if you want 31, call the Niners. They're willing to deal both picks.
31 is often a spot people want to trade into that back end of the first round. So let's see. Meanwhile, of course, we're just counting down the days now until Thursday with the draft. Wonderlic scores starting to trickle out as we get closer to this. That's something the league doesn't like. Shefty, you made that very clear to us in our first hour this morning. But for whatever it's worth, the score is out. Tua reportedly scoring a 19, which is just a tick below the average. So, Shefty, what are you hearing about that?
Greeny, there's football intelligence, there's book intelligence, and Tua has played with enough football intelligence over time to not give teams any reason to question that area. Saying that, teams will look at every single little factor as they analyze each draft prospect and they're getting ready to invest millions of dollars in a certain player. So in addition to all the medical questions on Tua, they want to go over everything. And the Wonderlic is a part of this. I don't think his 19 score is a factor in any way, shape, or form. It's just one more piece of information that teams have on Tua as they get ready for the draft Thursday night.
Well, here's what I find interesting about it, Shefty. This is a year, to the point you just made, where teams have much less information than they would be accustomed to, right? They haven't been able to get him to the facility. You talked last week about how they were trying desperately to see him in mid-March and weren't able to do it. They have limited access to the medicals. Do all these other little things that usually might be little things become more important this year because of the absence of that stuff?
You know, Greeny, there'll be certain players this year that don't have a chance to go meet teams and impress them, and they will not have a chance to rise. But on the other hand, there'll be players, of course, who have great skills, who didn't work out. I mean, it can go any which way. The bottom line is the process is going to unfold. It's the same for all the teams. We can look at it any way we want. It's an advantage for some players, a disadvantage for some. The draft is going to fall how it will.
Yeah, Dan and Marcus are with us again all morning long, and let me bring those guys into the conversation here as well. Dan, I mean, you were early on in being just in loving Tua, going all the way back to the beginning of when he first started to really emerge as a star. Now you hear the Wonderlic. Does it matter to you?
It does not matter to me at all, Greeny. I'll be honest, when the score first came out on Friday, I was shocked. And I was confused because I go, wait, his tape shows me a guy that can think so quickly and can process so quickly. But then the score was so surprisingly low, I was confused by it. And it threw me for a loop. And then I settled down and started having conversations with myself. And then I had this exchange with Coach Tony Dungy, and he's talking about what Chuck Knoll taught him in regards to when you're looking at a player, don't bring a stopwatch, don't bring a tape measure. What are they on tape? Who are they on tape? Because that will matter more than anything. And Tua on tape is a guy that would be a 50 out of 50 on any kind of test when it comes to the mental capacity. So initially I was shocked. It does not matter to me at all right now. I think what you look at on tape and what you see with the guy that completely understands football and completely understands that position, and his mind is not necessarily a detriment, but it's a weapon. It's a strength. It's a positive his. And so people need to make sure that when they're looking at Tua, and really every player for that matter, that their brain on tape shows more than what it does on a piece of paper.
Marcus, it was months ago sitting on our set back in New York where Adam Schefter said, put it on the bottom line, Joe Burrow is going to be the number one pick in this draft of the Cincinnati Bengals. And that remains as true today as it was when he said it to us. Were there not all of these other concerns with Tua? If Tua didn't have all of these injuries, how simple would that decision at number one be?
It wouldn't be simple, G. We wouldn't know who would be going number one in the NFL draft. Now, obviously, Joe Burrow put a season together that we've never seen in college football. But like I've said before, we've had these conversations about Tua Tagovailoa as well. We saw the Gardy numbers, what he was doing at Alabama, changing Alabama's offensive culture when Lane Kiffin came in and they went to the RPO. Tua Tagovailoa in this conversation right now, barring none of the injury history and obviously the hip injury that he sustained, we would not know who the Cincinnati Bengals would be taking with the first overall pick. That's the bottom line. I watched him play in Bryan Denny. I watched him go to Baton Rouge and play in Death Valley. Tua has a resume that stands up against anybody in college football. So when we get to this point, and this is where we are now in the draft process. That's why everybody tries to look for the sure thing. And like you mentioned earlier in this show, we haven't had much conversation about Joe Burrow because it's a foregone conclusion that he would be the first overall draft pick. We talked about Tua because of the injuries, obviously, but we've also talked about Tua because of the success against those injuries and the things that he's had to go through in his college career. Look, this kid is special. The teams that pass him up, just like the teams that pass Aaron Rodgers up, it's funny. They showed my draft yesterday on NFL Network, and a guy tweeted, he was like, they should have took Aaron Rodgers. And I said, you damn right they should have. And 24 other teams regret that they didn't take Aaron Rodgers. You have to be a guy that'll take shots at yourself to say that. But listen, there will be teams that will look at this if Tua falls to 13 or further that will say, damn, our franchise could have changed on that day, Thursday, April 23rd, 2020.
That's a big piece of this conversation because you've seen it. We've all seen it. As people are putting out these mock drafts, and they're credible people. They're people who are talking to people around the league. Everyone I see has Tua dropping another spot down there all the way as far as 13 in one of them from a very prominent guy, Peter King, who put it out there, who's a credible person, is projecting him at 13. That does not seem to make sense with all the conversation that we've been having, Shefty. What are you hearing?
Listen, anything could happen, Greeny. That's the great part about the draft. And if you had asked me the week that Aaron Rodgers and Alex Smith were in that draft, I never would have envisioned Aaron Rodgers dropping to where he did. Saying that, I don't envision Tua dropping out of the top 10 right now. That's me. Now we'll see how it unfolds on Thursday. And I got to tell you this. A lot of teams go back and forth. I know a couple of teams that have gone back and forth on Tua. Okay? Should they take him? Should they not take him? And you don't know where they wind up in the end. It can be very simple. There have been teams I've spoken to about quarterbacks last year that are on certain quarterbacks that changed their mind again a couple of days before the draft. So that happens all the time. So it's impossible to predict. But just saying all this, knowing how good Tua is, I don't see him getting out of the top 10. We'll see whether that holds up on Thursday night.
10 is an interesting thing because if he gets through 5 and 6, now all of a sudden, Dan, you're looking at teams maybe. Go ahead, Shefty. Looking at teams maybe looking to trade up.
That's the whole thing. If he gets through 5 and 6, then that's where it gets really interesting. Then we have some drama because remember the year where Johnny Manziel slid and people said, well, he couldn't get past his slot and he went past Dallas's turn. And so that happens. Once a guy starts sliding like that, if he gets past 5 and 6, then this draft gets really, really
interesting. No question. And you know who you start watching at that point? Our old friend, John Gruden. All right, as we continue here on Get Up, Jalen Rose guarded him. Stephen A. Smith covered him. They'll both talk about him as we continue next, looking back on Michael, Jeffrey, Jordan in a moment.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and The Last Dance is brought to you by Facebook, and it finally made its debut on ESPN last night with episodes 1 and 2 of what is a 10-part series chronicling Michael Jordan and the greatness of his era with the Bulls. It sees it through the lens of the final championship season, which they themselves titled Last Dance, and you saw that in episode 1 last night, and I'm here to tell you that it only gets better as it goes. Wait until you see episode 4 this coming Sunday. Meantime, here they are. Back together again, Jalen Rose and Stephen A. Smith are with us. And Stephen A., we've not seen you yet this morning, so good morning, and I'm going to give you the floor. What was the most important thing you took away that you wanted to share this morning, and we'll just jump off from there?
Well, for me, obviously, it's the fact that the greatness of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls wasn't ruined by age or attrition or anything like that. It was ruled by egos. When you have a guy like Jerry Krause, who obviously was an exceptional executive, the bottom line is he put everything together outside of Michael Jordan for that Chicago Bulls team. And for him to be so exceptional as an executive, yet to be in a position where you've won 5 championships and you're about to win 6, you're getting ready to start the season and win 6, and you tell the 5-time championship coach, somebody you hired, you could go 82-0 and you're not coming back. It seems to make no sense. So even though there was the Michael Jordan element and some of the things that motivated him, which was great for all of us to see. And of course, in episode 2, you looked at Scottie Pippen and his foolishness with signing a 7-year deal, and making like $2.8 million in his last year. What stood out to me most was Jerry Krause acting the way that he did and willing to disband this group. And more importantly, an owner in Jerry Reinsdorf, who allowed him to do it. And also in the process, you have one of the greatest players we've ever seen in our lifetimes in Scottie Pippen. Yeah, he messed up. He signed a long-term deal. But to not budge at all, not to do anything for the guy, it just appeared to be so heartless. And when I look at the Chicago Bulls now and their struggles, it almost seems like it's a welcomed comeuppance because of how they were willing to conduct business back in those days.
Yeah, Scottie Pippen, something they touched on last night, but was a big factor in that. He had had back surgery and back injuries. I think he was very concerned about his career being cut short, and he wanted to make sure he got money that he would be able to take care of everything. And then it turns out to be one of the worst contracts anyone has ever signed in recent sports memory, if not longer than that. So, JL, let me come back to you, because the conversation here, and Stephen A., you may have heard it, you know what happens. I post something on Twitter yesterday, I mean, innocently and harmlessly, saying you're going to get to see the greatest of all time tonight, Michael Jordan. You're going to love the film. And Jalen, immediately people start yelling at me about LeBron James. Why is there this that you can't mention this without it turning into that debate?
Yeah, and I understand. And there's going to be a generational and a recency bias. A lot of times when it happens during your era, you feel like it's the best. You see it in movies, you see it in music when people start to do lists, and you see it in sports. So there will be people of this generation that call LeBron James the greatest basketball player that they've seen. And for this generation, Greeny, he is. But for those of us that know more than just the LeBron James era and have a wealth of knowledge about the history of the game, there are some people that played in the league that were able to achieve a level of greatness that LeBron has not been able to achieve. That's why we call it a Mount Rushmore. Michael Jordan, we know, is there. And there are going to be people that want to debate. But for me, in no particular order, you can three-car Monty these people for all I care. Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Bill Russell achieved a level of greatness that put them ahead of LeBron James on that all-time great list. So to me, this argument never has any merit.
Stephen A., how about the Michael LeBron thing? You must hear it.
Well, first of all, I view it slightly differently. Jalen and I are on the same page when it comes to Michael Jordan. There is no debate. And, you know, one of the things that annoys me about this generation, and I would say to you, Greeny, I don't know why you give a damn about what people think. They can kick rocks. I mean, adopt my mentality. I thank the good Lord every day that my family, my mama blessed me with that attitude. I could give less than a damn what people have to say about, you know, my opinions if I firmly believe what I firmly believe. I believe Michael Jordan to be the GOAT. I do believe that LeBron James is on the Mount Rushmore. But to speak to what Jalen is alluding to, this generation is just softer, because you could sit up there and talk about LeBron like he's the number two player in the history of basketball, and folks close to him and those that are not close to him but just love him would treat it like you said the man can't play. It's unbelievable, and they hold on to it. Seriously. Now, the old school cats Jalen can speak to, the Jordans of the world and everybody else, they'll call you up, they'll debate you, they might even cuss you out, because I have been cussed out by those Hall of Famers if they've disagreed with me. But after that, we give each other a pound and a hug, at least before social distancing kicked in, and we move on our way. Today's generation actually holds it against you, builds up a cadre of people that are calling you haters, they hate you and treat you like it just because you disagree with them. As it pertains to Jalen's point about Kareem and Russell, yes, greater champions, won more rings. But when I put LeBron James on a Mount Rushmore, it's because of the eye test too, Jalen. You look at what he does, even with Magic. Yeah, Magic was a great leader as far as I'm concerned. Greatest point guard that ever lived. But when you look at the ability of LeBron James, Magic Johnson never had that. And even Magic Johnson knows that. So when you're talking about LeBron, you're taking all of that into consideration while also respecting 3 championships and 9 trips to the finals.
Jalen, go back to the previous part. I love that idea about how the players today handle the criticism, and I'm putting that in air quotes, because to say that a guy is the 4th or 5th greatest player of all time is hardly criticizing him. But that said, the way they handle it today versus the way the older guys did.
Oh boy! So here are a couple of metrics that when you're trying to decipher these all-time great players, and as Stephen A. alluded to, these guys are legends. They're GOATs. They're top 5 players to do it. So it's never any disrespect to even be a part of this conversation. If you're a kid from Akron, I'm pretty sure LeBron enjoys just being mentioned in the same sentence as people that he idolized, and he's a historian of the game. But a couple of things that when you start to separate them, Greeny, of course you're going to pay attention to their championships, but also pay attention to the times they won finals MVP. LeBron has done that 3 times, amazingly. Jordan has done that 6 times, okay? They didn't have the award when Bill Russell was playing. He won 11 in 13 years.
Yeah, they named the Kareem award after Bill Russell, Jalen.
Okay, right, exactly. Right. So I want to let me get on my Magic Johnson corner for a second. For those that don't know, there was a time when I was watching basketball on the black and white TV on the northwest side of Detroit, and there was a guy that was really tall playing point guard named Magic Johnson. Okay, he won the NCAA championship against Larry Bird in the Final Four. Turned right around to the NBA. You know what he did his rookie year, boys and girls? They 42. Won the NBA championship. Yep. Now, that's all-time greatness, winning 5 in like 12 years.
Go ahead,
okay,
Steve.
LeBron has played, 17 years? He's won 3. Here's what would have put LeBron James in that conversation. I'm going to give everybody the bullet. Here's the bullet. If LeBron would have went to Miami and they would have actually did, not 5, not 6, not 7, that would have been his chance to me to catapult those people.
Go ahead, Stephen A.
But that didn't happen.
Stephen A. actually raised his hand, which I think was a remarkable moment. Steve.
That's right. I want to be respectful to my brother. But here's the deal. I don't even say you have to go not 5, not 6, not 7. If LeBron James had won 4 straight in Miami, it might be a different discussion. If LeBron James had not lost to Dallas in the fashion that he lost, and we don't have to revisit that, it might have been a different discussion. But when I talk about LeBron James, and certainly it's not a criticism, it's just a fact, but the bottom line is great player, Mount Rushmore as far as I'm concerned. What you hold against him is what Jalen just alluded to, what Magic Johnson came into the league with, what Jordan came into the league with, and others. LeBron James had to mature to that point. Remember the All-Star game, Jalen, and I forget whether it was 2011, 2012. It's an exhibition game, Greeny and Jalen, an exhibition, All-Star game. Kobe is guarding LeBron, and LeBron, instead of taking it, throws the ball into the corner trying to get the pass to Melo, turns the ball over, and then you saw Kobe, D-Wade, and Melo all descend on LeBron. What are you doing? Because if you recall, that was his hiccup, his unwillingness to take the bull by the horn and say, move the hell out the way. I'm that dude. He had to mature to that point. They didn't. They came into the league having it. If there is an indictment, if you want to call that an indictment, against LeBron James in terms of the Mount Rushmore discussion, Jalen, I believe that would be the best argument in terms of a mentality. No. Not an ability, but the mentality. This is my world. All of y'all are squirrels trying to get you know what. Move the hell out the way. I'm going to take you there.
That was what he
didn't have at the beginning.
Go ahead, Jalen. I got 10 seconds. Final word.
I'm getting on my Arnold Horseshack here. So remember, LeBron James, 3 championships in 17 years. Magic Johnson has like 5 championships in like 13 years. LeBron James won 2 separate three-peats, 6 and 8 years. Bill Russell, 11 and 13 years. Like, that's Jordan, just a level of greatness that people aren't going to be. Those are the high scores on the video games, guys, and nobody's probably going to ever take them down.
Here's the good news. We have 5 more weeks to continue having these conversations, and Stephen A. and company will be doing it in 20 minutes when First Take comes your way here on ESPN. Well, guys, thank
Greeny.
You, and it was a delight to put this group back together. We're going to have to go to a break. I'm sorry. Because coming up, Mets slugger Pete Alonso might not be playing, but he is staying active, using his words to inspire, and he will explain how when he joins us live. Next, you're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
This year, when we have our normal lives and our game back, I can't wait to let all this pent-up anticipation out. We're going to play our hearts out, and I can't wait to hear y'all cheer your lungs out. Shake the damn stadium. In the meantime, let's all stay together and all stay safe. LFGM, number 20.
It's great stuff. He's become one of our favorites, obviously not just with his play last year and Rookie of the Year, but now with the way he's handling this downtime. And that's, of course, Mets first baseman Pete Alonso, who joins us. He's part of the All-In Challenge. And so let's get right into this, Pete. What is the experience that you are offering to folks here to raise money to help feed people who need it so desperately during this time?
So basically, the All-In Challenge, it's basically Fanatics is putting on the event, and it's basically, everyone's going to be, all the proceeds are going to be going to people who need meals, or just basically anyone who is affected negatively by COVID-19. So all the proceeds are going to be donated towards that, because this pandemic has really affected a lot of people, and I'm just trying to help out. And I'm going to be donating a fishing experience with my buddy Trajan Rodriguez, who's a captain in Tampa Bay, and we're, it's going to be you and 2 buddies, and we're going to go out there and rip some lips and slice some fish. And then after the trip, we'll have dinner, and I'll have some autograph stuff. So you can bid on that experience on Fanatics' website, and I'm pumped up about it. I'm really pumped up about it.
It's a wonderful gesture on your part, and there's no doubt that'll bring in a lot of money, because people love fishing so much. Now, I would tell you very quickly, I've done very little fishing in my life, and I've actually never caught a fish, which has been a source of enormous frustration for me. What kind of fish are we out there catching? Give me a sense of what it is we're going after on this trip.
So basically, it would be redfish, snook, trout. Those are like the basic main target species in Tampa Bay. The Tampa Bay fishery is absolutely fantastic, but obviously, like, if you want to go after something different, like, it's going to be your charter. Like, if you want to go after like snapper, or like if you want to catch a shark or something, then obviously me and my buddy will make it happen. So but I think it's going to be awesome. So whoever the winner is, it's you guys' show. We're just going to be out there having a good time. So
wonderful that you're doing this. I'll leave my fishing jokes for another time, because this is serious business here. You're donating this experience to raise lots of money for such an important cause. While I have you, Pete, quickly, there's been a lot of talk about baseball trying to come back, which obviously we all want so desperately. And you wrote that really nice letter there to the fans. We hear this talk about the possibility of a bubble city, if you will, in Arizona, where everyone might be. What kinds of conversations have you been having with other players about that? And what are your thoughts on it?
Well, for me, I would like it because you would have all of us in the same area. You would cut down on travel, which would limit outside exposure. And for me, I was lucky enough to play in the Arizona Fall League. And it would just be like a big league version of the Arizona Fall League. And for me, I would be a fan of it. And there's plenty of complexes, plenty of room. And I mean, this is just my personal idea. And then if you have every team out there at the complexes, sharing complexes, let's say you have six teams per complex, then you're allowed to have an 11 o'clock game, a 3 o'clock game, and a 7 o'clock game. All at the same complex. Like, you would have teams rotating in and out. Guys would, and then obviously, like, things would be able to be wiped down between games and stuff like that. But I think that'd be a good option. Like, if things don't get like turned in an extremely positive way, because ideally we'd like to play in our home stadiums. Like, for me, I love playing in New York and I love playing at Citi Field. But I mean, who knows what can happen? I mean, I think that if playing in Arizona is one of the only options, I don't think that's a bad idea. I would think it's a good idea.
Well, let's all root for it. And again, you've done so much here. You do so much with your own charity, Homers for Heroes, and now being a part of this all-in challenge. We appreciate it very much, Pete. I have to run. Thank you very much. We'll check in with you again soon. Thank you for doing this. And maybe someday we'll go fishing together, you and I. In the meantime, you can go fishing with Pete Alonso. There are so many athletes across the sports world who are all in, making a difference. Joe Montana is all in. He'll be on SportsCenter at 1:15 Eastern today on ESPN. And again, all of the money brings food to those desperately in need. And then, speaking of baseball, tomorrow night on ESPN, our look back at the most unforgettable games continues with the decisive Game 5 from the 95 ALDS, Yankees and Mariners. I'll warn you in advance, if you're a Yankee fan, avert your eyes at the end. Anyway, it's tomorrow night, 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. All right, coming up, we saw the greatness of Michael Jordan on display last night on Last Dance. Did that take away from appreciating Scottie Pippen? Stephen A. and Max will talk about that and more. It's First Take, following us here on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by National Geographic. Let the planet inspire you this Earth Day. Tune in Wednesday, April 22nd. Tonight on ESPN, look back at one of the greatest Monday night football moments with the classic Colts-Patriots showdown from 05. Peyton and the Colts trying to beat Brady and the Pats for the first time in 7 meetings. It's tonight, 8:30 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Let me show you how my day started this morning. So, of course, everyone, we hope, watched Last Dance last night, the first two episodes. It's spectacular and fascinating. And I woke up because I was on a text exchange between Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears. And I'll just show you part of it. So Dan starts it by texting, "Imagine watching this and thinking LeBron is better." To which Marcus, of course, comes back, "LOL, I knew it was coming. They'll make one about LeBron when we're older and someone will say the same thing." To which Dan responded immediately, "Stop, just freaking stop." And it didn't end there. I'm telling you right now, Marcus said, "My mind is not changing, bro. I think we're not done." Dan texted back, "You're too smart for this." And I'm telling you right now, it goes on and on. I could show this to you. I just posted that. Or sent across that snap, the screenshot of just that many, but it went on for a very long, it'd be like a scroll if it were to go on forever. And Marcus, here's what I have been wanting to respond to you basically for an hour, and I never got a word in edgewise. You said earlier that what you like about LeBron James' leadership style is the way he lifts everyone up, and your sense of it, if I may paraphrase, was that when Michael Jordan was doing it and the way he did it, it might not have been a whole lot of fun, right? Does that sort of seem like an appropriate way of looking at what you were saying? What is it they say in the National Football League about what it's like playing for the Patriots, playing for Bill Belichick, and playing with Tom Brady?
Not fun.
Right. So the point I'm making is winning is not fun. So if your primary focus is winning, then your primary focus is not fun. It's not who's feeling good today. It's not whose feelings might be hurt by what I'm about to do. It's either do what I'm telling you to do in practice, or I'm going to punch you in the face, which he literally did to a teammate in practice, who now, by the way, is the coach of the Golden State Warriors. So, Marcus, what I'm trying to tell you is I get what you're saying. But Michael Jordan, at the end of the day, was about results. And no one has ever had, in the modern era, has had the results that he had.
Gee, we continue to have this conversation, and we're going to continue to go in circles. And you know how much I love you and Dan. But there are so many arguments to be made with this whole leadership conversation. So many arguments to be made about championships. So many arguments to be made about the right situations when guys coming into the league. Listen, here's for America, because my Twitter timeline is a beast right now. Here's for America why, in my mind, LeBron James is the GOAT, and why I'm not changing it. Let me say that again. I am not changing my mind about LeBron being the greatest basketball player ever. Okay? That's it. 18 years old, weight of the world on his shoulders. Nobody even watched Cleveland Cavaliers play basketball. When LeBron came, they did, and took him to the finals.
Yeah.
I'm leaving it at that.
When Michael Jordan was 18, he made a shot that won a national championship in college basketball. Go ahead, Dan. What are your thoughts?
Greeny, we have a segment on this show. You have a segment on the show called Swaggy Says, yeah, where he takes words from somebody else and interprets what they really mean. So I'm going to do my own version of a Swaggy Says. Marcus Spears this morning said, man, I just like the way LeBron James leads. He uplifts everybody instead of goes at them. And now I'm going to become Marcus Spears. Man, what he's really trying to say is he's gotten soft as baby poop. Marcus, you have gotten as soft as baby poop.
Well, I think soft as baby poop seems like a pretty good place to leave it today. Fellas, you're the best. Thank you. This will only continue for the next 5 weeks, so we've got terrific stuff. We, of course, have plenty of draft stuff tomorrow. And if you are a medical professional or a first responder, we hope you kept the company this morning. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.